Week 5 saw Aaron Rodgers do it to Dallas again. The Rams let one slip away to Seattle. Big Ben wonders if he can still play. And the Chiefs literally can't be beat. Plus, we saw a couple of superstars go down with major injuries. We're breaking it all down on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are talking week five. This was a roller coaster, mixed emotions type of weeks, couple of good games, a couple of devastating injuries. I think that might end up being the sort of the headliner of this week.
Yeah, I mean, some big-time megastar players, probably the two biggest non-quarterback stars, in fact, in the NFL, Odell Beckham and J.J. Watt. On a brighter side, Gary, I thought Dallas-Green Bay, which I'm sure we're talking about first, I thought that was by far the best game we've seen this season.
Number one.
I think there have been some really good games this season. I thought this was a very good game. I guess I'm just not in the mood for hot takes right now, Andy.
Well, I don't know how hot that is, because what I love is when teams play well within the context of how they're built to play. In other words, the Cowboys and Packers each played their brand of football this afternoon. They played it to the best of their abilities, and it came down to the very end because of that. I like it when teams play well within the way they're designed to play. That's the highest quality of football that you can get, and I thought that's what we got in this game.
Okay. Well, we are officially branding it topic number one, which is an honor in and of itself. Well, let's start with the comeback, because that was obviously the most memorable part of this game. And I was talking to Jenny Brentis a little bit immediately after the game. She was looking for a topic to write her Tuesday column on. And I sort of mentioned, so you have Aaron Rodgers, which is very good for the Packers. You don't have Jordy Nelson on that last drive. Now, we talk a lot about how the Packers and the Giants are systematically kind of on the same, the same family of systems here. And when you watch the Giants and Odell Beckham Jr. is not in the game, they are a different offense. They are a much worse offense. With the Packers, it's almost like they lose these weapons and Rodgers keeps on carrying them. And we see it with teams like the Falcons, who have a little more of a differently designed offense. But with the Packers and what they do, is this just Aaron Rodgers being superhuman?
A little bit. The difference between the Giants and Packers, when you take out the best weapon, is the Packers have a quarterback who can go out of the context of the play. He can extend the play. He can go sandlot mode. He can break it down and get even better a lot of the time. So they're built to play and survive differently than that. In fact, we see Rodgers all the time. It befuddles us. He'll even go into that mode of play when the design did work. Eli Manning's very much an on-time and structured QB. So I guess that would make Eli technically more dependent on his wide receivers to win. Rodgers does things a little bit differently. And I thought he played on time in this game, though, Gary. And it's interesting, the fine line that you always go over with Aaron Rodgers about playing sandlot football and playing on schedule and which do you do. And I thought the matchup show, actually, our favorite, Greg Cosell, he made a great point this morning. Rodgers, you don't see a lot of 5 and 7 step dropbacks. So you see 3 step or you see randomized football. He doesn't play on time at those intermediate lengths of time, though. And that's where Eli Manning really thrives. In the 5 and 7 step timing, Manning can be great. Rodgers will go 3 step timing, which we saw in this game, including on that final drive, or he'll totally extend the play altogether. And either way, he's hard to play against.
Yeah. Well, he certainly got it done in this one. My favorite throw was the one that he hit, went out to the right on the run, hit Martellus Bennett 25 yards downfield, just on the money, which he seems to do in Dallas a lot. As far as the Cowboys go, I mean, look, they're falling to 2-3 here. They had the bye week coming up, so they got to stew over this one for 2 weeks. But I don't know. Are there problems with this team? Is there something you look at and say, uh-oh, this is not what it was last year?
Not really. Their four-man pass rush didn't show up when they needed it today, but Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, you rush the passer a little differently when you face Rodgers. In fact, for Dallas, a lot of times it's a three-man pass rush. And what happened late in the game is their spying system broke down on that 18-yard scramble that Rodgers had. That really was the biggest play in the game. Both linebackers, I believe it was Durant and Jalen Smith on the field, they both reacted to the running back. I'd almost guarantee you one of them's supposed to react to the quarterback. So we could look at Dallas's pass rush. We've had concerns, but DeMarcus Lawrence is better than he was a year ago, obviously, and he's headlined that thing. David Irving is back. They had him a defensive tackle today. I didn't know he could play that position on an every down basis. He played nose tackle a lot of the snaps, was very effective. So their four-man, it's interesting because their four-man rush is better than a year ago. And the other question we had about him is the quarterback and what happens when the weight of the world gets thrust on his shoulders, which is going to happen at some point in the NFL. We've seen that a few times this season, and Dak Prescott has responded marvelously. I think he's become one of the more intriguing playmakers in the NFL. Still needs to be more consistent. A lot of young QBs do. But Prescott, if you had told me beginning of the year the way Dallas's O-line would uncharacteristically struggle, the running game would take a little bit of time to get going, and the way Prescott would respond to all that, I think if you told the Cowboys, they'd be jumping head over heels over that. So this team does not have glaring weaknesses. And in fact, their two greatest weaknesses a year ago, the four-man rush, and I don't want to call Prescott a weakness, but let's say Prescott as the guy and whether he can be that or not, those questions have been answered on the positive end, and yet here the Cowboys sit already with the same number of losses a year ago. It's hard to reconcile.
Yeah, and look, the Packers lost Kevin King concussion in this one early on, and I thought the two malign guys in that Packers secondary, Demaryius Randle and Quentin Rollins, the two guys, high draft picks who have struggled, I thought they held their own all right. I'm not going to say they played great, but I thought they played all right.
Yeah, Randle was opportunistic. He had that opportunity on the touchdown, on the interception that Terrence Williams created. Rollins, I think I've struggled with him on film all season, and I think we saw a little bit more of that in this game again. There's a reason he's where he is on the depth chart, but you're right. They did not kill them overall, and that a year ago, those cornerbacks had destroyed him. That Kevin King guy, by the way, Gary, he's a good player. He's already traveling with – I know the announcers were saying he wasn't traveling in this game. He was traveling with Dez Bryant. That's why Devon House traveled with Bryant when King went down. They're already using King as their true number one cornerback. Now, they do safety help in their coverage, a lot of two-deep stuff. But Kevin King's an interesting player. I don't remember the last time I saw his first game was against A.J. Green, and he traveled with A.J. Green in his first NFL start. I don't remember seeing that.
Yep. Situational football here. What'd you think of the second down fade to Dez Bryant that stopped the clock late for Dallas? I had a problem with it, Andy. Did you have a problem?
I did too. The only reason I had, it's easy to say, well, it's incomplete, the clock stopped, shouldn't have done that. The reason I had a problem with it is if you're going to throw in that situation, you want your throws to come off of some kind of running concept. You've been running the ball down their throat. They expect you to run. The clock's moving. That's the perfect time to throw between the numbers or play action or something. When you throw a fade, that does nothing to take advantage of the run game that you've just built yourself up on. You can throw a fade on any down. That doesn't impact any run defenders. So I thought a lot of coaches believe you throw in that second and short situation. If you're going to do that, I thought Scott Linehan needed to do something inside to take advantage of the running game that they'd already had established.
Yeah. Yep. So Aaron Rodgers goes 75 yards in 1:02, wins it late in Dallas again.
Number two.
And this was out in L.A. where the Rams had a golden opportunity to take full control of the NFC West. And they let one slip away against the Seahawks, and this is going to eat at their souls for a little while because they had 5 turnovers and missed a short field goal in this game and end up losing 16-10. I don't know. I mean, is this going to be a ball security issue with this team? Goff ends up turning it over 3 times. Tavon Austin muffed another fumble. He's had 3 of those this year now. And they had the Gurley, you know, the Gurley got stripped by Earl Thomas at the goal line on the very first play of the game. This was a game that they should have won it. The Seattle defense was good, but the Rams should have won this game.
They're going to feel sick, and my guess is they feel that way about the Washington game in week two as well. And that also ended in a turnover. This one ended in a near touchdown for Cooper Kupp on that seam pass.
Yeah.
That's got to be a bad feeling to watch that fall just short when the play design appeared to work. I think we're going to see this with the Rams. It's a young team running a complex offense. They went up against a fast defense today. They have some highs. They're going to have some lows. And a lot of turnovers in the NFL, they get chalked up as mistakes by the offense. All right, got to take care of the ball. A lot of them are forced turnovers. Even the ones that look like they're just bad offense almost always in professional football, and this is one of the things I love about it, it almost always stems from good defense, holding penalties, any live action mistakes, they tend to stem from good defense. And I haven't broken these turnovers down, but my guess, Gary, is when you put the film on, we're going to see half of them were Seattle creating the turnover.
Yeah, and look, he said Frank Clark beat Andrew Whitworth around the edge on one of them, and Andrew Whitworth just really hasn't been beaten at all this year. And then they had a interception where I think it was Jerron Reed just pushed a lineman, Saffold maybe, back into Goff's lap as he threw it, and throw sailed high, and that was another interception there. But this was brutal. Seattle defense was very good in the second half. The Rams really could just they could not stay ahead of the sticks here, and there were a lot of third and longs, and Goff made some plays. His stat line will certainly not be impressive. And he wasn't overly impressive in this game, but he made a couple plays when they needed to make plays down the stretch. They just, boy, you know, you go to the red zone three times and you come away with 3 points. That's not going to do it against Seattle.
No, and this shows the Rams' makeup as well, because Jared Goff, you're right, the stat line's not impressive, 22 out of 47 passing. Well, the running game was kind of eliminated from them a little bit today. It was not the foundational running game that we're used to seeing, and the way they're built, that's going to impact Goff significantly, because so many of their best passing concepts derive from running concepts, and when you're putting him in obvious passing situations, that's a whole different equation, and it's a different looking game. And the speed of the game picks up, and that Rams offensive line's not built for that necessarily, and Goff is not at that point in his career where he's going to prosper in a faster game.
Number three.
This is the Sunday Nighter, and this one got diffused pretty early by the Texans' injuries. And say flat out, I mean, look, the Chiefs are 5-0 now, and they absolutely looked like a 5-0 team in this game. They were just tremendous. But, you know, Texans lose Whitney Mercilus, and then they lose J.J. Watt, and they could not get off the field. They literally couldn't get off the field in the first half. It was Chiefs had 5 drives in the first half. They scored on all 5.
And I don't know if these are injuries. Obviously, we hope that they're not long-term injuries for these guys. If they are, I don't think those are injuries the Texans can survive. They're already banged up in the secondary, and that secondary has been treading water at times. They ask a lot of it schematically. It's not an easy scheme to play in. Well, now you eliminate your pass rush, basically, because they don't have a lot of depth rushing the passer. They are schemed pass rushes, and their scheme centers around having guys that you can't match up to one-on-one. Well, they've just taken two of those guys out of the lineup. There's only one of them left, Jadeveon Clowney, and now the offense, in a certain way, they can match up two-on-one more often than they would have before, because Clowney's the only guy they have to focus on.
Yeah, I mean, Watt, it sounds like Watt is definitely going to be out for the year here. It was a tibial plateau fracture, and that's a lot of words, and never good when it's a lot of words. But basically, it's an injury that's probably going to be season-ending, and then it looked like Mercilus, it's someone with the pectoral injury, and I mean, that's usually a multi-week injury at least, if not a potentially season-ending one. So, this is trouble for them, and Deshaun Watson put up points again. They did some garbage time stuff at the end. They added 8 points on the last drive when it was kind of like, you know, why don't we just get Deshaun Watson off the field right now?
Yeah,
after he almost
that,
got rolled up on the last play from scrimmage putting up a meaningless touchdown. And then they went for two and had him running, and it's like, all right, guys.
Watson's done some good things. He's off to a nice start. I think we've seen a lot of improvement from one week to the next with him in terms of staying in the pocket, eyes downfield. Now, he's reckless at times. He's Jameis Winston-level reckless, and he does not have Jameis Winston's arm. So that has to be really eliminated from his game. It's amazing he hasn't been picked off seven or eight more times than he's already been picked off. But you'll take that from a rookie. At least he's seeing the field, reading the field, playing with an assertiveness, and I like the way he runs. I'm still, you always judge that carefully. Is the running sustainable? What kind of runner is he? He's not Cam Newton. He's not going to do it 12 times a game and be just fine, probably. But he looks like a firmer Robert Griffin in terms of running style, kind of a lanky guy. Robert Griffin was a little bit of a hurdler as a runner. He ran with his feet light off the ground, which was nice for gaining speed, but it made him vulnerable to those big hits. I feel like Watson's a little leveler. He's very explosive and dynamic like Griffin, but he's built to take the hits more because he doesn't get his feet so high off the ground when he runs.
He also delivered a pretty nice tackle after
Deontay
Foreman lost the fumble and Derek Johnson scooped it up. And as soon as Johnson turned around, he just got a Watson's shoulder in his midsection and just got taken down.
And the highlight play, that was a great one. Obviously, that's not a big quarterbacking strength moving forward. Let's hope not for him, his tackling. But the highlight play is that touchdown to Will Fuller. And not because it was a great throw, and not only because of that, but because of the way he moved in the pocket to avoid Nunez Roches, who'd gotten in on a stunt, and then reset the throw. That's the key, and that's what Dak Prescott's done too, by the way. These mobile quarterbacks that are willing to reset in the pocket and then throw, that's where you can build your foundation, because a lot of these guys are it's wired in them to just break down when a guy like Nunez Roches gets in on a stunt, and now we're broken down, we're going to run around. Watson's mindset was to throw there, and he made a great throw off of that. That's a great, great sign for him moving forward.
Yeah, and as far as the Chiefs are concerned, I mean, look, they controlled the ball for almost two-thirds of this game, and they never really got the run game going until the very end when it was sort of game was sort of sealed up. But this was Alex Smith converting a lot of third and medium and third and long. And, they just sustained drive after drive and completely took the air out of the stadium. Not that the injuries didn't play a role in that, too. But, this energy stadium got very quiet very quickly in this one.
There's a Chiefs coach I meet with every year at the Combine. So it's usually the first meeting I have. And I'm not going to say his name because I'm not sure Andy Reid likes his guys meeting with people. And it's not Andy Reid, who I've met with as well. And he's very nice. Told me to lower my voice when I started talking scheme in the stands of Mobile. That'll get your attention when a head coach tells you to lower your voice. I felt like I was 8 years old. But this coach, I have two questions I cannot wait to ask him. One is, how has Alex Smith gotten so much better late in the down or in third and long situations? Whatever it is, we've known that the longer Smith has to hold the ball, and third and long, you by nature have to hold the ball, the worse he's become. That's been his history. That's not true anymore. He's been great holding the ball, and I think holding the ball for good reasons. I want to know why all of a sudden he's gotten comfortable with that. What are the details? And then the other one is, how much does misdirection in their running game, which is what their whole ground game is built around, is that Tyreek Hill going one way, multiple options built into the run plays, Alex Smith might keep it, he could shovel it, he could run it, all that stuff. They give you a lot of pieces to process defensively. Does that have an accumulative effect on defenders over the course of a game where guys start seeing so much that they start playing slower? The guys, if they get tired, they don't see and process the information as quickly. What's behind that? Because Kareem Hunt is putting up enormous numbers late in games. As it's gone on, he's gotten stronger every week. And typically, you think of a Jerome Bettis type of guy wearing people down. That's not what he's doing. That's not his style of play. He's a little guy out there, and he runs strong, but he's not wearing people down. Their misdirections running game gets better over the course of the game, and I wonder if there's something, maybe that's a question for a defensive coach too on another team. Is it harder to defend a misdirection ground game like Kansas City's late in the game after they've shown you so many things?
I could see that. It, you know, you get worn down physically, and you know, it kind of turns into one misstep, turns into something you can't recover from anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and we got to ask somebody. We have to ask, because that's a hard thing to play against. It's been five games now, and I think we'd have to check the stats. I believe they've gotten better late in the game and have had some huge runs late in these games all 5 weeks.
Number four.
The Steelers head home after a little road trip here, and they just, yeah, they didn't have it. Jaguars dominate this game. And you know what? I'm going to back off that for a second. This game was within reach until a series of interceptions, series of Roethlisberger turnovers here. And I just want to, I'm about to lay out just an absurd string of excuses, because Ben is obviously very distraught about everything that went on, and certainly all Steelers fans are distraught about what went on today. But he threw five interceptions. Two were phenomenal plays by Jalen Ramsey. One of them, the one that Ramsey knocked out of Brown's, Antonio Brown's hands, was an off-target throw, but not brutally off-target. That's not usually a play that's going to end in that kind of disaster. So he had two great Ramsey plays. He had one deflected ball at the line of scrimmage. He had one where Juju Smith-Schuster got tripped up and fell down, and that turned into an interception. Then he had one, you know, garbage time. They're down two touchdowns. He has to force a throw into coverage interceptions. I didn't think this was like a freak out type of performance. I mean, obviously five interceptions makes people freak out, but I didn't think this was a sky is falling type of outing. I was surprised to hear Roethlisberger as I don't know, doom and gloom after the game as he was.
Well, let's maybe we take a grain of salt to doom and gloom. You have to consider who's asking him the questions, and does Roethlisberger have any regard for that person in that moment? And if the answer is no, then he's probably bound to say anything, because who gives a crap? He doesn't respect the whole conversation. And that's how I would feel. I mean, if I threw five interceptions and they were the way you just described it, and then a beat writer comes in, no disrespect to beat writers, but they don't know the play calls, they're probably not breaking this stuff down, they just see the five interceptions, I would probably be inclined to say, yeah, I can't play anymore, and just cut right to the chase on those guys to make him go away or exaggerate, whatever it is. I mean, it might just be a petulant thing he did.
I don't know. Let's talk briefly about what it means for a quarterback to be done, because now the conversation is Ben Roethlisberger done, which to me suggests there's some sort of physical fall off, some sort of he went off a cliff, almost, you know, something beyond, like, you know, Peyton Manning in his final years, where the arm strength is just no longer there. That doesn't seem to be what's going on with the Roethlisberger. I don't know if there's any other thing that would categorize a quarterback as he is done, he is too old.
Well, if it was beyond Peyton Manning, like you said, then we would see that, because Peyton Manning couldn't throw anymore towards the end.
Yeah.
It's funny that we have these conversations after the fact. Like, he has a bad game. This is not the first time Roethlisberger's thrown a bunch of interceptions in a game. He's been around for, what, 12, 13 years now? Mm-hmm. So we don't look at this stuff proactively very often, which means that it's hard to tell when a quarterback is quote-unquote done. Like, we look at Drew Brees right now, and we can see some diminished skill with him, but I don't think anyone's saying he's done, because the productivity's still right there. If the productivity starts to drop, but we haven't seen any diminished skill, then what are we to make of that? And that's a hard question. That's a question a general manager has to answer, and there's probably going to be several different answers if you pulled all 32 of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, what else? Let's say if he is done, and he being any QB, because I don't want to have a conversation along the premise that Roethlisberger's done, because we don't know that yet, and that's a big thing to say. But what would we start to expect to see if a quarterback is all of a sudden done? I mean, it has to be arm strength, mm-hmm. and that's about it. And how often is it? It's not as easy as you would think to recognize diminished arm strength. You have to see a lot of throws in order to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I can think of, and maybe this is why you put Roethlisberger in this category. You know, as you get older, your body control, your balance is not quite what it was. Does that affect your accuracy? You know, your ability to sort of repeat your mechanics and throw accurately, consistently. Again, I don't think that's an issue. I think, look, you'll watch the tape this weekend, and I think you'll see he forces a couple of throws. I don't think he has a velocity problem. I don't really think he has a huge accuracy problem any more than, you know, I always say, like, when he plays on the road, he misses these throws he shouldn't miss. And I think it was sort of a little bit of that today. It was also the weather. I know I just threw out 12 excuses for the guy, but I just didn't think it was, you know, if you just watch each throw in a vacuum, I didn't think there was anything particularly problematic with his physical performance today.
And those throws, interceptions must be evaluated in vacuums because there's so many variables that go into them. You have to see the tough part is it's hard to go find the balls that should be intercepted that aren't, because those need to be evaluated in a vacuum as well. But let's say two of these interceptions were not his fault. Well, now it's a three interception game, and we're probably not having the conversation. We're saying it's a bad day for Roethlisberger. We're not having the conversation of whether he's washed up or anything. And again, he kind of started this, I guess, by bringing it up himself. I'm eager to what Peter King called me after the games tonight and told me I'm writing the Roethlisberger deep dive on Wednesday. So Monday morning, I'll be watching this film. Peter thinks I'm watching all five games Monday morning. Fortunately, I've done four of them already. I've seen the other Steeler games.
Yes.
So I'm going to see the rest of this Monday, and I guess I'll have to render an opinion. But you've given me the push start. You've told me.
I was going to say, did you see anything over the first four games that made you flag, this is something to watch?
No, not off the top of my head. And you want to go back? I'll go back through my notes, but I'm only going to look at my notes. I don't know if I want to go back and look at the film, because you got to be, when you watch film, you have to be very careful of preconceived notions, because they're so easy to see once they're in there. You can really be influenced. That's why I don't like to hear a lot of, I don't look at stats or anything very much, because you'll see what you want to see so often. So I'm going to look at only my notes on Roethlisberger. Has not been a great year for them. I mean, their whole offense has not gotten going yet, and it's inexcusable because they have more talent than probably everybody in the league, including along the offensive line. They're as good as almost anyone. So something's amiss there, but let's go take a close look before we start describing a superstar Hall of Fame quarterback as done.
We just shortchanged the Jaguars, by the way. Jaguars defense is wonderful. They were excellent today. Jalen Ramsey just making plays. He gave up a long catch to start the day, and then just, I mean, he turned in highlight plays along with his usual shutdown performance, and they win a game where, let's see, Bortles completed 8 passes for 95 yards, and Fournette added a 90-yard touchdown run when the game was already decided for the most part, and the defense just dominated this game.
That's how they're built to play. They did that earlier in this season. We said they're going to have to try to do this every week. They won't be able to, but this was one of the weeks that they did, and good on them. That defense is fast. And if there was one corner I had to take right now to start going in this league, I'd take Jalen Ramsey. I don't know if I even have to think about it. I love the body type mixed with that athleticism. I've never seen anything like it.
Andy, before we move on, a quick note. Every guy wants to look good and dress well, but really, who has the time for clothes shopping these days? I know you and I don't, especially this time of year. Bombfell is an easier way for men to get better clothes. You complete a simple questionnaire and then are matched one-to-one with a dedicated personal stylist. They never charge above retail price. They offer free shipping and returns, convenient home try-on, and the ability to preview and edit your stylist's hand-picked selections before your order ships. Your stylist will email you his or her selections, after which you'll have 48 hours to make any changes or even cancel altogether. You are in total control. Then when you receive your clothes, you have 7 days to tell us what you want to keep. Send the rest back. It's completely flexible. You can receive clothes when you want and can pause or cancel at any time. I gave it a try, and it couldn't have worked out better. My stylist picked out a pair of jeans, a plaid button-down. I didn't think I could pull off plaid, but it turned out I could. My wife was very impressed, and I'm certainly happy with what I got, and especially with the ease of use of the whole thing. Now, we have worked out an exclusive offer for our listeners. Get $25 off your first purchase by visiting bombfell.com/10things. That's bombfell.com/10things. Again, that's $25 off your first order at bombfell.com/10things.
Number five.
Giants and Chargers, and again, the headliner in this one is the Odell Beckham Jr. injury, a broken ankle. He is out for a while. The Giants are sitting at 0-5 now, and I am officially proclaiming their season to be over. I know producer Lou Pellegrino, who is a big Giants fan, already made that proclamation 3 or 4 weeks ago, but now I am saying they are done.
I probably agree with you. Now, that doesn't mean... And this is a conversation that's important to have, especially with the way that the other team in New York's been treated this year. That doesn't mean that they should tank the season or anything like that, or look to next year. I mean, I think their season's over if we're talking making the playoffs. I also think they have 11 games left, and those 11 games will matter to a lot of guys for a lot of different reasons. And you have to keep playing. And any idea that you do anything less or that you bench Eli Manning and take a look at Davis Webb, which I'm sure someone's going to suggest, is foolhardy. It's mistaken at best.
Yeah, and this one, even before the Beckham injury, they had lost Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard, so they are scraping here.
Yep, they're done. They're out of receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing they drafted Evan Engram, I guess, but it certainly wasn't enough to make this one work today. I guess the disappointment is, the run defense wasn't great. That was a strength. Melvin Gordon broke some tackles. Melvin Gordon played really well in this game and sort of created some things. But overall, it was just sort of it was an ugly game. And a couple of late turnovers turned this one. They might have held on for the win even after the Beckham injury. Strip sack of Eli turns into a point for the Chargers, and this one got away from them.
I'm eager to see Melvin Gordon more. I think he might be a pretty good gap scheme runner, and I don't know this for sure yet. Gap scheme is man-to-man blocking. Think pull blockers, so runs like power or counter. Where you wait and set up your blocks. Le'Veon Bell is a great gap scheme runner, setting up those counter blocks. They do a lot of that stuff in Anthony Lynn's scheme. Now, I get the sense they're still trying to put together their run game identity. We're seeing some of the Anthony Lynn items, but they don't look like the Bills or the Jets looked under Anthony Lynn yet in the ground game. Ultimately, they're going to want to get there, and I think Gordon could be a pretty good runner in that type of system. I'm still getting a feel for it, though. It's a very different approach for him than what he had in his first little bit in the NFL.
It is, and you know, he's coming off a couple of down weeks statistically. He's also dealing with a knee injury, and look, he was good in this one. He actually caught two short touchdown passes, and he's gotten much better in that area since his rookie year, but. There were just a couple plays where he had to break tackles. He had another long run that was called back on a penalty, so he looked sharp. And it was a day where neither quarterback was particularly efficient. Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen couldn't get on the same page, and it was sort of a it was a sloppy game. I don't know how else you can really say it. But Chargers outlast them. This is usually when we're talking about sloppy games, it's about the Chargers losing one late. But this one they end up stealing in East Rutherford, and congrats to Anthony Lynn, first win as a head coach.
Well, head coach with the Chargers, yeah, first win as a full time head coach. And by the way, your mention on Gordon's a good one on that passing game. If you're playing with Phillip Rivers and you're a running back, you have to be proficient in the passing game, if for no other reason than Rivers is so effective getting to his check down and understanding when and how to do that the quickest and the best timing. So that's what Danny Woodhead was good at for so many years. And Gordon, you're right. He's improved a lot as a receiver in that regard.
Number six.
The Panthers and Lions. Carolina goes to Detroit. Another tough road game. Come away with another win. It looks like they are sort of reverting back to the 2015 Panthers. I had actually written about this Saturday night/Sunday morning. I thought they were going to sort of go back to a whole lot of Cam on the ground. It was the stat I had was through the first 3.5 games of the season, they had run Cam on a designed run 5 times for 10 yards. In the second half in New England, in that win last week, they ran him 5 times for 38 yards. And a couple of those were key third down conversions. One was like a 3rd and 7. He had a touchdown on a run. Today, Cam had 0 rushing yards. 7 attempts, 0 rushing yards. Did it all with his arm. He was a little bit... I mean, look, he had a couple of throws that were not quite there. A couple of them, Christian McCaffrey had to catch a ball behind him. And you know, it wasn't a perfect game that he threw, but... I mean, it was good, and he hit a couple of throws that he's been struggling with, and he hit a couple throws on the run. Cam looks like he's sort of getting back to what he was in 2015. I don't know if it's just a confidence thing. I don't know if it's a health thing, but this was certainly, you know, last week in New England was encouraging, and this week was, I think, just as encouraging.
Carolina ran the ball 28 times for 28 yards as a team,
yeah.
And they came away and won on the road.
Yep.
That's a big victory. When you can win on bad days, and that's a bad day for Carolina, and maybe their passing game was great, but they set out to win with their ground game first and foremost. When you can win on bad days in the NFL, you're doing some good things then. I mean, that's a real positive. I think this whole idea, we've talked so much about Newton and the new offense and changing the offense for him. I think it's going to solve itself this year. You're saying he looks more like 2015. They can play with McCaffrey in their 2015 system. In fact, I think he can be pretty effective in that. We just talked about the value of getting to your check down. If Newton can get that through his mind, and I think he's done a good job with that so far this year, and they've done a good job of building high-low concepts in the passing game where one receiver's high, check down's low, and you go high-low on one defender. Smash is another thing people call that. If he can be effective with that, and he's shown that he kind of can be, then they're going to be fine. And McCaffrey can still be dynamic for him. Newton's always going to miss some throws. He's just that kind of passer that he is, which is why I don't think the quick timing game works. But an offense like this one where there's room on a check down and it's a deeper throw, he's great for that. He's absolutely set up to play that way, and they're going to realize that. They have been. And they're 4-1. They're going to keep trying to win. And if they're building plays just to try to win, they're going to accidentally become the 2015 Panthers because that's how they're best built to win.
Yeah. And look, they're doing it without Greg Olsen, too. And certainly credit Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin. You know, those big guys, they're suddenly playing big again. I thought the Panthers were a pretty fugazi 2-0 team a couple of weeks ago. And now I think they're a pretty legitimate 4-1 team at this point, and this is going to be a really good race in the AFC South between them and the Falcons.
Yeah, and they're going to
NFC South. I always mix that up.
I was going to let you get away with that. They play they play Philadelphia too, another 4-1 team on Thursday night. That's
yeah.
going to be a great one.
That's such a bummer that it's a Thursday night game because you get the sort of crap version of both teams.
Well, we'll see their crap version versus Philadelphia's crap version. You know, the crap version games have been pretty good. That New England-Tampa Bay game, I like that. I thought that was great crap version football. And then before Dallas and Green Bay tonight, I thought the best game all year was Rams and Niners, at least from a entertainment standpoint.
It was
week
entertaining.
Two, Thursday night.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's fumbles and sloppy play.
You know, part of the problem with these Thursday games, because we're obviously not taking them quite as seriously as other games. You just call them the crap game, and I think a lot
yes.
of people think that.
Yep.
They wear those pajama uniforms, those color rush uniforms.
Yes.
And it makes the whole thing feel gimmicky. It already
yeah.
feels a little gimmicky, like, oh, they're playing on Thursday. Well, we all know they didn't prepare the same way for this game. They're not as healthy as usual. Let's trot them out in these gimmicky-looking, buffoonish uniforms, and let's let the fans really feel like this isn't the NFL. I think the color rush thing needs to apply to 1 o'clock games on a Sunday to make that kind of interesting. Let these teams look like NFL teams Thursday night. I am already dreading whatever the hell the Eagles and Panthers are going to be wearing in this game.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I think that you just do throwback on Thursday nights.
Throwback Thursday. It's pretty well branded. It rhymes. You could do that.
No, not rhymes. That's alliteration.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Or just Topping where are the uniforms you have? I don't know why we have 10,000 uniforms anymore. It's not the NBA, at least, but it's getting close.
Well, you know why they have 10,000 uniforms, because you got to sell 10,000 uniforms. If you don't own all 14 different versions of the Carolina Panthers uniform, you are not a fan.
To their credit, though, they don't mess around a whole lot. Like, they won't change their... I've always wondered why they don't wear silver pants on the road. They have white pants, mm-hmm. and then they never wear the white pants with their dark jerseys. So they at least have some pantular...
Pantular's a great word.
Discipline. That's the word I'm looking for. They have some pantular discipline. Yeah, New England's the same way. They won't change their pants either unless you make them. I did see them wear... years ago, like maybe 10 years ago, they did wear a blue jersey, blue pant combination one night. But that's rare for them. Some of these teams, at least they're not changing their pant colors.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's end that topic on pantular discipline. Great term.
Number seven.
This will be the Panthers' Thursday night opponent. The Eagles they hammered the Cardinals early. This one was not competitive. Lots of deep throwing from Carson Wentz, and again, he got away with a couple in this one, but he also connected on a lot of big throws in this game, and it was not close. Three touchdown passes in the first quarter, and 34-7 final. The Eagles look like they are going to be a force to be reckoned with.
They're a diverse offense. We've said all season we think they're going to expand from being one of these quick strike teams to one of these more of a downfield team. You won't forget how to play quick strike. You won't be quite as good at it if you're not practicing it, but it's all about what your quarterback can run. And Carson Wentz is a guy that can push the ball down the field. They've also had a very diverse running game the last couple weeks. I didn't know if they'd be able to do that against Arizona. Arizona's a really tough defense to run against, partly just because of the way they line up. They'll crowd their mm-hmm. fronts and make you have to block one-on-one inside, and Philly does not have very good one-on-one interior blockers, not in confined areas. Kelsey's a guy you want out on the move in space more than in a phone booth. So I didn't think Philly matched up particularly well to this Arizona defense, and to jump out to a big lead early and have your young quarterback throwing downfield and playing a different brand of football than what you played the last 2 weeks, that's a real big win for the Eagles.
Yeah, and more trouble for the Cardinals. I don't know, man. This just feels like the end of the Arians Palmer Fitz team.
Yeah, it might be. They've had a very nice run, and you hope that they get honored with some kind of thing, a ring of honor, or some kind of something like that in Arizona. It's been a good era here. They can't play the way they want to play right now with that offensive line, and they're not making many adjustments. Bruce Arians believes in getting five guys out in the route, which means you're blocking with only five. The other one's throwing the ball, of course, your 11th guy. So if you're blocking with five guys, you're playing one-on-one pass protection. They don't have a single guy that you can trust in one-on-one pass protection. They're down to backups, and even their starters were not very good to begin with. So they really can't play the way they want. And then the discussion becomes, well, what do you do? Because most people say, well, you got to start giving them help, pass blocking help. Well, they don't have those plays in their system a whole lot. They haven't been working on that stuff. You can do it, but they're not as good at that. So do you try to do something that you know you're good at, but that you have a severe weakness prohibiting you? Or do you do something that at least hides a weakness, but that you're maybe not good at? That's a rock and a hard place. That's their offense right now.
It is. It's a bummer.
Number eight.
The Bengals hold on against Buffalo in Cincinnati. I thought this game was a good illustration of just how little margin of error the Bills have with this team. I mean, look, Sean McDermott's doing a great job with them. They just don't have the talent level, really. And this was a game where they won the turnover margin, the turnover battle, 3-1. And still, you know, they only scored 16 points. They end up with the on the wrong end of a 20-16 loss against a Bengals team that certainly isn't much of world beaters.
And that was my concern. That's what I wrote in the deep dive about Buffalo this week. Is their 3-1 start was legitimate. Those were good NFL victories that they had. I don't know if you can sustain that though, because of what you said, that thin margin of error. They're built to win with defense and the running game. And it works if you did what Jacksonville did today, but I guess, boy, yeah, you're right. They had the turnover battle, and it didn't work in this case for them. So,
yeah.
Look, here's the bottom line with all of this stuff. At the end of this discussion, it all comes down to, at some point, your quarterback has to make plays. And if he can, you're going to win some close games. And if he can't, you're going to lose more close games than you win. Tyrod Taylor, as unique as he is, and I think there's a lot to like about him, when we say quarterback makes plays, that's an obvious passing situation. That's that type of play. As an example, so we talked about Deshaun Watson earlier and how he sidestepped Nunez Roches and then made the throw to Will Fuller. You never see that with Tyrod Taylor. You would see Taylor would break that down and run, and that's the difference. As Taylor is not Watson, he's not Dak Prescott, he's not one of those mobile QBs that has trained himself to become a thrower. He is just a mobile QB, and just a mobile QB, that's not enough in the NFL. We've already seen the best one of all time was Michael Vick, and Michael Vick never really won anything.
Yeah. And, I mean, look, he's in Taylor's defense. He's short on weapons here. I mean, their wide receivers had 3 catches today. He threw 37 passes. So, you know, there's a whole lot of LeSean McCoy, Nick O'Leary, Charles Clay, Mike Tolbert leading the charge.
Which is an indication of, yeah. It's an indication that you're getting very defined, schemed reads, and that's been their offense. They do these outside bootleg throws, and it's been those guys, O'Leary, Clay, and McCoy, especially O'Leary and Clay, on the bootleg designs. You're right. They don't have a lot of perimeter weapons. And Jordan Matthews is out right now, too, so they're thinner at wide receiver than usual.
Yep. I mean, look, this was a game they led going into the fourth quarter, so tough to let this one get away. Bengals, look, they're it looks like they're turning around pretty nicely here. They're up to 2-3, and you know, as you remember, they dropped the Thursday nighter to the Texans when Deshaun Watson went on that wild scramble, and they lost an overtime game in Lambeau. So this team might be a little bit better than people are giving them credit for.
Well, in 2-3, they're only a game. I mean, the leaders are Baltimore and Pittsburgh at 3-2. So that division's still very competitive. And I don't think they've played. They play Baltimore. They got shut out by them in week one. But I don't believe they've played Pittsburgh yet.
They have not. So that's coming up.
Number 9.
Let's round up the rest of the games. A little bit of a shorter week with the 4 teams on bye. Let's start with the Jets and the Browns, because the Jets just can't stop winning games now. They go into Cleveland and get the win in this one. I guess on top of the Jets now having a winning record, the other story in this one was Deshaun Kizer got benched by Cleveland. Kevin Hogan, I mean, he's not the long-term answer, but he was better than Kizer, and it seems like this might be a switch that sticks for at least a little while.
I don't know. It's interesting what they're doing there. Cleveland, Hugh Jackson he's not made it easy on Kizer. They're probably the deepest drop-back passing team in the league in terms of how their route combinations are playing out. They are stretching the field at the intermediate levels. The other teams that do that are Arizona's the one that always comes to mind, or the Colts when Andrew Luck is in. Well, those are veteran quarterbacks. This is a rookie quarterback. He's playing behind a great offensive line, especially in pass protection. So you can get away with that, but they have no wide receivers. So these deeper designs are not working. They're harder field reads for Kizer. So he has to make complicated, or let's call them difficult reads. And some of the concerns we saw at Notre Dame in terms of down-to-down accuracy and how consistent is he in his ball placement, those are starting to surface now already. They didn't the first week or two. They have it since then. And my guess is that contributed to why Jackson brought him off the field today. And it's tough to do that with a rookie quarterback. You tend to think those guys, I mean, what does Jackson expect? He's running a hard offense with a rookie QB who has no one to throw to. What's he think's going to happen with that offense?
Yep. And Jets catch a couple of breaks in this one. By the way, Austin Seferian-Jenkins was their leading receiver. That is a Jets rarity, a tight end putting up, well, he didn't put up numbers, but he was their leading receiver. He had 6 catches for 29 yards, but that was number one today. They did
for
not
catches,
get a whole lot
in
going.
Terms of catches.
In
now, let's not
catches,
short Jeremy
yes.
Curley, who, yeah, Jeremy Curley lit it up with 39
yards. 39
yards. It only took him 4 catches.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there was a certain efficiency to what McCown did. They did not run the ball. They also, look, Browns rookie kicker Zane Gonzalez misses 2 field goals, while Chandler Catanzaro hits a 57-yarder that started the scoring in this one. So that was kind of how this one played out. Everyone, I think, had this one circled on their calendar when the schedule came out, and it was just as beautiful as you thought it might have been. We'll get more lightning-y right here with the Dolphins-Titans. This one was nasty, Andy. This was not very good football. No Mariota.
I saw every snap.
Okay, what's the deal with Jay Cutler? I mean, do they turn to Matt Moore at this point? Is this going to work out?
I don't know. Everything in their offense is functioning at just about 20% worse than you would be expecting right now. That yeah. includes pass protection, route execution. They need to be a run-based offense, and they're getting caught in a lot of third and long situations, and they've been awful in those third and longs. I think the play calling's been very cautious, which tells you that they're not comfortable with who they are and what they have right now. So Cutler, it's not working out right now, but let's keep in, you know, it's a big game. It's a big game, big picture thing. I don't think you make the change. Not yet.
Okay. Let's go out to Oakland. No Derek Carr for the Raiders, and this one started as badly as it could have. Ravens march down the field, get an early touchdown, and then get a scoop and score on the next play off a who was it? It was Jared Cook lost a fumble, and Jimmy Smith scoops up, takes it in. This is exactly where the Raiders did not want to be, down 2 touchdowns early with E.J. Manuel under center, and it played out that way. They kind of hung around. It was a one-possession game late in the third quarter, but, you know, they didn't score enough points, and they're not going to score enough points with E.J. Manuel under center.
And for the Ravens, thank goodness, Joe Flacco, 19-26 for 222 yards. Not world-beating numbers, but numbers again.
Yes.
Passing stats that can show up on a graph, which hasn't been the case the last few weeks. So maybe we see Baltimore turn it around and get going. They need some kind of offense there. They're too good defensively to be below 500. So it's nice to see them at 3-2.
Yeah, I was going to say, anything sort of D-plus effort from Joe Flacco would have been promising today, and he was a little bit better than that. Let's wrap it up. Colts and 49ers, the game that no one actually talked about. We'll talk about the actual game here for a moment. Colts go to overtime. This was, I mean, look, 49ers were game in this one. They made a big comeback. George Kittle took over the game. Of course, the rookie fifth-rounder from Iowa. It ends up scoring the game, tying touchdown late. Teams go back and forth. Brissett threw what looked like another back-breaking overtime interception to start the overtime period, and the Colts defense holds and gets the ball back. They end up setting up Vinatieri for the 51-yarder to win it. Nice win for the Colts.
There you go. Gary Gramling finishes the lightning round. He took care of that one.
There you go.
Number 10.
Weekly awards, Andy. Who do you have for Offensive Player of the Week?
Oh, boy. Offensive Player of the Week. How about Devontae Adams for being in the hospital 10 days ago and then making the catches he made and playing that Jordy Nelson role in the final drive where he's the guy getting the back shoulder throws? Those are not throws Aaron Rodgers would have delivered to Devontae Adams even 2 years ago. Adams has improved and earned so much trust over the last couple seasons, and to see him play big in this game was quite impressive.
Boy, really going with the narrative there, Andy. Very unlike you with your ice-cold heart.
Well, I went to the back shoulder stuff, and he ran some of the slant-flat combination. I mean, there's still football stuff right there.
I think maybe the Christmas spirit is getting the best of you. Good to hear. I'm giving my Offensive Player of the Week to I'll give it to Cam Newton. Again, 0 rushing yard. I thought it was going to be a running thing coming back to him to sort of get him going. And maybe it did sort of spark him here, but zero rushing yards. They only go for 28 as a team, and Cam ends up throwing for 355. Does not turn the ball over in this game, and this was a another quality road win for a team that looked like it was on the brink a couple of weeks ago. Defensive player of the week, Andy?
I told you I watched every snap of that Titans-Dolphins. I need to feel like I got at least something out of that. So
yep.
How about Charles Harris, their first-round rookie in Miami?
Oh,
there,
nice.
He had a sack. He was disruptive a number of times. He's been playing defensive tackle for him, which I think fits his skill set. But his sack today came off the edge. Now Taylor Lewan was out for the time at left tackle. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, he got hurt early. So I believe it was Dennis Kelly he beat. But, hey, it's an NFL sack, and there was some burst off the edge. And it was not a complete waste of time for me to watch the Dolphins-Titans at great length today.
There you go. Look at the productivity there from that game. I'm giving mine to Jalen Ramsey. Again, gave up a big catch early, and the plays he made were absolutely worthy of the highlight reel. He basically set up the first touchdown for the Jaguars, and then he knocks a ball into Barry Church's, out of Antonio Brown's hands, into Barry Church's hands, turns into a pick six. Those are just huge plays, and he is becoming a dominant player in this league. Special teams player of the week, Andy. Who do you have?
Well, as you know, I don't break down special teams, so I'm not going to pretend to know what I'm talking about. The guy that I remember most today was Mason Crosby, who I think missed a couple of extra points, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But what I noticed about him is, have you seen how gray his hair is? Like how
He's
just
pretty
old
gray.
He looks?
Yeah.
He looks elderly. He's 33 years old.
I don't know if he looks elderly. He just looks like he went prematurely gray, like a young Steve Martin, perhaps.
Well, gray and elderly tend to kind of correlate. I'm Googling Crosby now just to make sure he's indeed. See, his photos, like what they take at the beginning of the year, some of these you can tell these guys don't get them updated very much. Remember Peyton Manning's photo, like his bio photo, was like the same since he was in his early 20s for his entire career. It drove me nuts. I couldn't believe the league didn't make Peyton Manning update his bio photo. But when you scroll down a little bit on these Mason Crosby, yeah, he looks elderly. He's my special teams player of the week. These Mason Crosby Google images.
Yeah, when you started that, I was like, oh, Andy's putting effort into special teams player of the week this year.
No, he had some. It's hard. When kickers miss extra points, it's hard to give him the award. I'm sure he'll get overlooked by the league again. But he has so much gray hair.
He does. That is a true statement. You know what's weird about special teams this year, Andy?
What?
Only two return touchdowns this season. Tyreek Hill was the second one tonight.
Yeah, and I always fast forward because it seems like every time there's a good return, it's a hold or a foul or something anyway on the returning team. And I don't break down special teams, and I try to get as much in as I can. So I'm not. I use the time to watch other things. I did see the Tyreek Hill touchdown return though. So I've seen one of the two TD returns this year. I happened to not fast forward that play. Just I don't remember why I didn't. I was reaching for something else at the time.
Yeah, they both came in primetime games. The
what was
I,
yeah?
I
what's the other
the guy?
One?
I can't remember. No, the Lions game. Lions in Lions Giants, and I can't remember the guy's name right now. But I will look it up. It was Jamal Agnew.
Okay, yeah, and that one that's right, the punt return, and I did have to rewind that one.
There you
go. I've seen one of two. I got punished for skipping that, but I'll take one missed punt return TD for in exchange for missing all the special teams plays, because you save about 20 minutes a game doing that, and that's 20 minutes that can be applied to offense or defense.
All right. I'm not giving my special teams player of the week to Tyreek Hill, even though I just mentioned his punt return TD. I'm giving mine to Chandler Catanzaro because he kicked it 57 yards at the end of the first half in that Jets-Browns game, and it ended up being a difference-making kick in that game. But mostly it was the first points of that game, and there's a real energy when the ball went through the uprights. I think it was a real feeling of despair that sort of left the stadium after that. There would be points in this game.
works for me. Very good. Oh, we have to do Coach of the Week.
Coach of the Week.
Do you have one in mind?
I'll give it to Todd Bowles. I'll stay in Cleveland with the Jets win, and I'll give it to Todd Bowles because his defense. I mean, look, it's not a tough offense to overwhelm in Cleveland, but his defense was good again. He's getting really good play out of his young safeties, and everyone criticized him for taking how do you take two safeties? Well, if you're gonna have two really good safeties, it works out. It works out well with that. But these guys are playing with him, and a team that was supposed to maybe go 0-16 is sitting at 3-2.
Yeah, I'll go Andy Reid because he faced a Texans team that they've played a lot over the last few years, and they've gotten to know him pretty well. And this is a highly schemed Chiefs offense. I think it's the best schemed offense in the NFL. It's remarkable the amount of stuff they do and how it all builds off of each other, and the way he builds plays, where what we mean by that building offense is calling one play to set up another play later and giving them similar looks and punishing them for that. Maybe that's why that running game gets better in the fourth quarter, is because Reed is designing it and building the plays to be even more deceptive from snap to snap. He's having a great season in Kansas City.
Andy, I was going to give it to Andy Reid, and I decided to honor our handshake agreement at the beginning of the year that we wouldn't repeat awards. We'll probably have to.
Dude, I don't remember that agreement. Have I done Reid already?
I don't think so. But I did Reid, so I didn't do Reid tonight. The other thing about this game, the Chiefs game, is that Monday night game where they beat Washington, that was such – it was not only Monday night, so they had one last day, but it was such a physical game. I really thought it was going to be a letdown game for the Chiefs in this one, and it was not in any way, shape, or form.
I love watching that team play. They do a lot of great stuff, and they blitz less than anyone in the league. Bob Sutton used to be like the most blitz-oriented defensive coordinator in the NFL. Yeah. He's really changed his mindset. And the reason why is because the ball comes out so quickly now, so many teams spread out and throw, their thinking is, all right, might as well put these guys back in coverage because the blitzers don't have time to get home and get to the QB anyway.
It is good to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan right now, 5-0, of course. But for now, we're wrapping it up. Thanks to producers Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, all those guys at Cadence 13 making the sound so good. Our thanks to this week's sponsor, our friends at Bombfell. If you want to look good and don't have the time to shop for clothes, go to bombfell.com/10things and get $25 off your first order. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. We really appreciate the fact that you are willing to put up with our nonsense every week, every Monday morning for some of you. Again, we love hearing from you. Contact us, Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We're both on Facebook, or you can write into talkback@themmqb.com. Let us know what you like, what you hate. We're always listening. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and of course this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.